That's the position of the international community. That's the position of the UN. And that is the, that's what the international legality is saying. So the international climate system shouldn't operate in a different way from the international system. Justice is indivisible. It goes for the political settlement of the conflict, but also it goes for the legal status of the territory. And we are asking for a climate justice. Climate justice will involve that Western Sahara, the data on Western Sahara, should be excluded from the Moroccan reports because Western Sahara has never been part of Morocco. That's the UN stand.
That's Obi Bashir, the Polisario Front's Europe representative and climate change consultant Nick Brooks, who's worked with Western Sahara on its climate plan. We spoke to them at the UN Climate Summit last week. That does it for our show. If you want to see our documentary, 4 Days in Occupied Western Sahara, a rare look inside Africa's last colony, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with more insights.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring for a web and new media coordinator. Our web and new media coordinator is responsible for KBOO's website and social media accounts. Applicants should have experience administering a CMS such as Drupal and experience administering a MySQL database, including backups and queries. For a complete job description and instructions on how to apply, visit kboo.fm/employment. Applications are due by November 17th. KBOO is an affirmative action and equal opportunity employer.
Did you miss the Afro-Caribbean and Reggae Marathon? No worries. You can go to kboo.fm/ACR to listen to the archived show. You can also snag a limited edition KBOO Afro-Caribbean and Reggae hoodie before November 20th to show your support for the music and the programming you love. Again, you can catch the Afro-Caribbean and Reggae Marathon and snag a limited edition hoodie at kboo.fm/ACR.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01 a.m. It's Wednesday. Time for the Wednesday Talk radio program with your host, Paul Rowland. So stay tuned to your community connection, KBOO Portland.
Good morning, everybody. This is Wednesday Talk Radio, and I am your host for the next hour, Paul Rowland. We've got a full show lined up for you this morning. We've got two halves, very unusual for this show. First off, we're going to talk about illegal logging once again in the Brighton Bush River drainage and a whole bunch of people who are out there to stop it. And I've got a guest, Sam Kropp, from the Northwest Climate Forest Alliance. And then the second half, I've got two water protectors from down in northern Nevada who are continuing the efforts to stop a lithium mine down there. And I understand there's potentially some evictions of some people from the Winnemucca land base down there to... Anyway, we'll find out a lot more about that. The start-off song... Some of you out there might remember Cecilia Ostro, who was a major mover in the fight to protect the native and old growth or ancient forests in the Pacific Northwest. She started the Cathedral Forest Action Group, which actually I got involved in, which is the group that organized the first protest at Brighton Bush actually 35 years ago this month. And I was actually one of the tree sitters there. But anyway, we're going to talk about mostly current events. But Cecilia now goes as Haru Spruce. She actually has a website, Haru Spruce, H-A-R-U, spruce.com. And got some of her music there, including that song, which is from right about this time, again, 35 years ago, during that kind of the heyday of the beginning of the heyday of the forest protection movement. All right, with that, community organizers defied a closure order and are occupying a road leading to public forest slated for clear cutting in the Willamette National Forest. That's down there again near Brighton Bush Hot Springs. The organizers are holding a concert and teach-in discussing the ecology and rich history of the area and preparing for further actions if logging continues to move forward. And as I said, my guest for the first half hour is Sam Kropp, Coalition's Director for the Pacific Northwest Forest Climate Alliance. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me on the show, and thanks for that beautiful introduction with a little bit of history.
Yeah, actually, I've got a little bit more history I can maybe read from a little later, but you probably know this as well as I do by now. The actions that are going on right now are in a long, long line. That's one of the areas that's sort of been one of the focuses of the forest protection movement for now decades, and the actions that were taken back then didn't the tree sits in 1986, nor the series of blockades in 1989 during the Easter Massacre, which we can talk about 3 years later, didn't stop it. But then, in combination with the concerted legal effort on all different levels, eventually some major changes forced by the courts did end up protecting most of that watershed. But then there is some big fires. And so I know you're very knowledgeable about the whole issue of fires and fire ecology and the necessity of not going in and logging right away after a fire. So set the scene. Talk about why people are there right now.
Absolutely. And again, thanks so much for starting us off with talking about a little bit of the history of forest defense in this place. It can't be overstated how much of a beloved place this watershed is, both for its rich history of forest defense, but also for so many other reasons and ways that folks have really come to love this watershed, the Brighton Bush watershed. But right now, I think that it's probably not incredibly widely known that this watershed is once again at risk. And the current risk is a plan by the Willamette National Forest Detroit Ranger Station to clear-cut log in century-old forest and forest that was burned in the 2020 Labor Day fire. And so the reason to give a little more of a backstory and why you're calling this lawless logging and we've been calling it lawless logging is really because these projects, what we saw after the 2020 wildfires, which obviously were historic wildfires in this region, what we saw was an immediate response by many of our forest managers, including the Willamette National Forest, to just close the areas, close the National Forest off to the public. And so a lot of gates were closed and trespassing signs were erected. And since 2020, those have remained closed, and the federal closure remains in order. And meanwhile, a significant amount of post-fire clear-cutting has been happening across that watershed. And basically, folks, despite the fact that there's been people not allowed and trespassing the area, folks have noticed. And people who love this area are extremely upset that this is occurring. First, it was the roadside clear-cuts, which turned into massive 400 to 500 foot roadside just clear cut corridors along the tons of road networks throughout the watershed. Thankfully, the proposal to move forward with many, many more, over 400 more miles of that logging, has officially been halted recently by a federal judge. But what folks don't realize is that there's an entire other project to so-called salvage logs or post-fire clear cut in a lot of forest up there directly across the street from the Brighton Bush Hot Springs Retreat Center and directly along the Brighton Bush River around tons of different waterways that are tributaries to the Brighton Bush River. And I will say one more thing before we can get into just the action that happened yesterday and kind of the larger, the other context of that. But it's important to say that this logging project that's still moving forward, that the Willamette National Forest is still planning to log this winter, was done in secrecy without sufficient environmental analysis or public input. There, for the past few years, have been a robust engagement by community members in this watershed with the Forest Service to advocate for the Forest Service, to advocate that the Forest Service protect its older trees. And the Forest Service heard community concerns and made some commitments to not log old trees in that area. However, after the fires, those contracts were secretly changed, and the only reason that folks found out is because of a public records request, which exposed that the logging contracts, which originally we had hoped would not take any old trees and would be intentional and respectful on the land base, have just been hastily changed since the fires and now include clear-cut logging. And that's unacceptable, especially as it's happening behind locked gates and without any public input and environmental analysis. So there's three conservation groups who have filed a lawsuit, another lawsuit to try and stop it. But unfortunately, the loggers, the National Forest, may go ahead and just log the entire area before the judge has an opportunity to rule on the case, which would moot out the entire case and obviously destroy that incredible post-fire complex forest. So that's why folks were showing up yesterday and taking action in the way that they were.
And of course, there's a continuity with some of the past episodes in the what were known as the Forest Wars by some back in the day, 1980s, 1990s, that was actually a common practice that once anybody actually tried to file timber sale appeals and then if went ahead, they tried to file court action to prevent the logging, they would just log it and then it would go before the judge and say, oh, it's moot because it's already been logged. The Easter Massacre at Brighton Bush was one of the famous ones. There's a lot of different aspects to this. We know this is let me just say, you know, why this is so important. I know you can say this too, but, you know, these are still, I mean, we were fighting for some of the last unlogged original forests in the Pacific Northwest back in the day. They were, you know, less than whatever, 5% or whatever. Obviously, it's a lot of the logging of the old forests, the ancient forests, has been slowed down because of the Northwest Forest Plan and various protections put in place, but it's still been going on in various, you know, ways, various subterfuges, various excuses. But these are now some of the last unlogged original forests without any designated protection like wilderness in the certainly in the Middle Cascades. And so this, you know, it's just amazing they're still going at it. So what are, before we get into the action, so what are some of the excuses? You mentioned that there's, you know, there is protection of the Northwest Forest Plan for the Northwest Spotted Owl. There's riparian protections. There's all kind of protections, laws that you say should be followed by regular procedures. So what are the excuses they're giving for going in so fast without any environmental review?
That is a really great question, Paul, and I think a really important one, especially given the fact that most people think that there is no logging program on our federal lands, period. And, you know, there's also a conception that the Northwest Forest Plan solved all of our environmental problems, which is also a misconception. But the reality is that while certainly since the times of the Easter Massacre, the rate and scale of logging of specifically old growth forests has been significantly slowed. The management agencies are excellent at finding workarounds and loopholes in order to continue on with a lot of these destructive practices and find ways around the logs. And one of the easiest loopholes to be found right now is after a fire in a post-fire landscape. And the reasons for that are multifold. One of the easiest ways that management agencies are able to immediately come in to post-fire landscapes and clear cut is by doing so in the name of public safety or hazard tree removal. This is not the hazard tree removal is not the euphemism that they're using for the clear cutting that they are continuing to move forward with in the watershed right now, but it's one way that they were able to do significant clear cutting around roadside corridors. And you know, I will stop here and say, of course, there's absolutely reason to make sure that trees are not falling on folks' heads when they're traversing very well-used roads. But the footage and the imagery and the site-specific evidence that we have from what they have done has shown incredible overreach and just some what I would say, you know, blatantly disgusting failure to manage the area in a responsible way. And there's some significant scars in the landscape because of that. Another way to do that, aside from hazard removal, is simply just by saying that these trees are no longer economically viable, and so they should be salvaged, or the worth or value of them needs to be salvaged before a couple years when those burned trees degrade. And so in post-fire landscapes, basically, timber sales are able to move forward incredibly swiftly without this environmental analysis and public input under categorical exclusions, which are, you know, the fancy name for basically these loopholes. And it's quite easy. And like I mentioned, you know, with the lock gates, they happen pretty much in the dark of night and in secrecy. And when we actually see what the effects are on the ground, it is certainly devastating. And I think what you mentioned, too, about these being some of the last remaining old forests is incredibly important. You know, not only have we seen just landscape-level devastation in the form of clear-cut logging since the 2020 fires that have cumulative impacts for not just the watershed, but for our entire state, but also we need to consider the context of climate change and the fact that these aren't, you know, the forests are valuable for their own in their own right, as I think we would both agree, as forest defenders. And now we know that our forests are our best tool at combating climate change. And especially here in the Pacific Northwest, these forests specifically are just unparalleled in their ability to sequester and store carbon. And here we are with our federal management agencies targeting some of the greatest carbon stores to do post-fire logging.
Didn't he agree to this, you know, global forest protection initiative that supposedly is one of the victories coming out of the recent COP climate change summit?
Exactly, and that's an example of a symbolic step that is not currently being played out on the ground. We saw a commitment from the president to stop deforestation by 2030. However, we have, you know, the conversion of old complex forests to young monocrop plantations, even if you're replanting, that's deforestation. And I think we need to start being much more clear about that. And in a post-fire landscape specifically, logging is the worst possible thing you can do in a sensitive place that's trying to recover.
Look what's happening in British Columbia, for crying out loud. It's just massively devastating the scorched earth summer that we had and shared with them up there. They suffered even more damage, but you know, 116 degrees or higher up there, and boiled the earth, and baked the earth, and massive fires, and now they're suffering these just unprecedented massive floods and mudslides. And we know the link between fire, floods, landslides, destabilized landscapes. It's just outrageous.
Absolutely. And that's the knowledge of that and the growing body of science-backed and peer-reviewed evidence that points to that, but also just our own observations and what folks are seeing on the ground is really why we had such an incredible turnout in folks, you know, turning up, community members. And I'm talking, you know, not just activists, but students and teachers, veterans, people who are local to the area, truly an intergenerational and quite incredible turnout yesterday in the rain, in the cold, defying a federal public closure. 50 community members turned up to one of the forests that are slated to be cut by the National Forest this winter and occupied the forest road leading into the timber sale for a day of movement building, education, and essentially organizing and preparing for, you know, folks to turn out there again if logging is actually to continue, which is still slated to be. And so I'd love to talk more just a little bit about what that looked like yesterday, but I will say that if anything, it was a demonstration of the fact that community members love this place and do not want to see it clear cut behind lock gates.
Okay, I just wanted to, what I said before about the fire and landscape and floods, et cetera, I guess what I meant to say is the going in and then disturbing the soil even more with logging is absolutely the worst thing to do. That the it can restabilize itself on its own better than it can with any human help. Anyway, so there's no one still out there, I take it, from what you're saying.
Not today, but the promise that folks left with as they left was that if logging is to continue in that watershed, people will be back. And it won't be a symbolic action in the future. People don't want to see that place logged.
So is any response immediately from the Forest Service?
Nothing yet, and they haven't been, typically they decline to respond when asked to do so by the media on things like this. However, you know, I would say that the Forest Service and the timber industry, and as an aside, Frere's Timber is the company, the corporation that is responsible for buying all of the wood in the Santiam watershed after the 2020 fires, and has bought the forest across the street from Brighton Bush Hot Springs that people were protesting in. And that, you know, in the words of the industry and often the Forest Service, they will underplay and have underplayed the amount of logging and their plans, the future plans for logging, essentially claiming that the public is overreacting. And, you know, I have come around to calling this what I believe it is, which is gaslighting. And thankfully, you know, we have people, there are people who live in that area who can see what's happening. And there's a lot of folks who, you know, lost their summer homes, cabins in the fires and have been able to get out there and see the clear cutting of the old growth forest surrounding those cabins that the Forest Service is responsible for and later apologized for because they were in the wrong. And so I'll say, you know, for all of you who see and know that this is wrong and can tell, you are not, you know, you're not wrong. There's been a significant and, you know, somewhat a historic level of post-fire logging since the 2020 fires, and much of that has been at the hands of the Forest Service, despite the fact that they may claim that it's really not as big of a deal as we're making it.
And of course, we should mention, I don't think we've mentioned that the Oregon Department of Transportation is another one responsible for massive amounts of logging along, supposedly to protect people along the roads from falling trees. And of course, they send these crews that have no understanding of forest ecology, and they say that, you know, maybe it's up 500 yards up on a hill from the road and might happen to slide down. They're just taking massive amounts. So Oregon Department of Transportation, which is responsible for other climate disasters, including proposed freeway ride widenings, et cetera, is also implicated in this particular story. So so I know there's a number of groups that are active in this. Cascadia Forest Defenders sent out a press release. Your own group, the Northwest Forest Climate Alliance, other people can plug in and get involved in this, yeah?
Absolutely, and you know, I couldn't stress enough that the folks who showed up yesterday in the forest, and you know, not just to protest and to stand in the way and occupy the space, but also, as I said, to, you know, to movement build. There were workshops celebrating the area. There was, you know, plant walks and discussions of the forest and the history and storytelling and music. You know, that group was incredibly, just community members from different places. There wasn't, you know, it wasn't one group or two groups organizing this. It was a lot of people who love this place. And so, yes, people are welcome. The Pacific Northwest Forest Climate Alliance is a network of over 60 grassroots, mostly organizations who are working at the intersection of forest and climate work. And many of our organizations have, been working in this watershed, trying to stop logging in this watershed for a long time. Many of our members have actually explored a significant amount of this watershed on foot in order to write public comments and create site-specific information that we have worked with the Forest Service to try and use to advocate for it. And so there is a long history of tons of people caring about, engaging in, and advocating for this place. And that history will only continue as we move forward. And, you know, as we see, hopefully, that the judge has an opportunity to rule on the legality of this plan to clear cut before they go ahead and do it anyway.
Do you know, is there a court date set? Do you know what the timeline on that might be?
Yeah, so we do know that the hearing is scheduled for December 3rd. And those organizations that are on that lawsuit are Cascadia Wildlands, Oregon Wild, and Willamette Riverkeeper. Those are the three conservation groups that have filed that lawsuit. But as I said, you know, this has been, you know, even extending beyond the 2020 fires, but just the advocacy for this watershed has just been a labor of love on behalf of far, far too many groups to count. But we do hope, you know, after the December 3rd hearing, we still have no date that we know the court case will be decided. So we're basically, we're watching the clock, and we're hoping, and we're not just hoping, but we're demanding that the Forest Service not log in this incredibly special place, at least until a judge has an opportunity to determine the legality of this plan, which we believe is illegal.
So do you think that, I know, you know, back in the day, there is, you know, the actions that we took back in the mid-80s, really, you know, people really didn't, you mentioned people don't know that there's a logging program. People really didn't have, most people had no idea that they were, you know, clear cutting in these just beautiful original forests, you know, because they're out in the backcountry, and it was mostly, you know, the dedicated hikers and backpackers and, you know, the local fishermen and hunters, but they were basically mostly either on the side of the logging or didn't want to say anything about it. So you didn't have that many people, you know, who might have a different viewpoint knowing about it. And what we did really made a huge difference. It got on the news. It got the word out there. And then people got engaged. People started writing letters to the Forest Service, showing up at protests. Is there any value in connecting, you know, trying to get to the Forest Service, writing letters, calling them up?
Absolutely. And thank you for bringing up, you know, a call to action. There's a lot of ways to get involved in this struggle, but what we're asking folks right now to do is to make their position known to the Forest Service. Give them a call, send them an email, and tell them that you're aware of their plans to clear cut and fire burn forests in the Brighton Bush watershed, and that you're not okay with it, and that you're also aware that there's a court case that's waiting to be ruled on, and that we're watching them. The community, you know, the larger community is watching them, and that basically, we're not going to let them get away with taking this incredible place from us in a sneaky, behind the gates fashion. And so it would be great if folks could call the Forest Service and deliver that message. We are hoping to really inundate them with that ask, at least to leave this place alone. But really also, you know, this is not going to be the last fight that happens in the Brighton Bush watershed. As you started this program by saying, this struggle has been going on for decades and will continue to. Our forest management agencies suffer from a powerful amnesia and continue to introduce timber sales in the same watersheds we've successfully or unsuccessfully fought them off. But thankfully, our movements don't. And so we're certainly getting stronger, and our networks are getting more solidified. And we're going to keep fighting every single time these destructive projects pop up, and hopefully we'll win.
Well, I haven't yet put that on my program page. There's a bunch of other links to the different organizations and articles and some history about this at kboo.fm, Wednesday Talk Radio. I will, maybe you could get me some more specific information on who to call and how to contact them, and I'll include that on my program page. That seems really important. You know, I know that you mentioned people walking those trails. I know that, you know, the trail network that's around, you know, that the Brighton Bush community uses, the ancient, the various Emerald Forest Trail, the old Spotted Owl Trail, etc., were made almost all by volunteers who grew out, basically got activated by the first round of movement back then. And because the Forest Service was actually closing trails And because they didn't want people to get out and see what was happening, people took it upon themselves to make these trails. And, you know, some people in the Forest Service kind of came around. There's been a battle within the agency back and forth, and obviously hasn't, in the end, changed very much, unfortunately. But so people get up on the history and check out these links. And we got to go to our next segment. Of any final words for our listeners out there?
I would say thank you so much for this opportunity. We really need more folks to take a stand, whether it's in Brighton Bush watershed or, fight where you stand. But we're hoping to grow a movement of forest and climate defense, and really appreciate the space to talk about that. Thank you, Paul.
And thank you. Thank you, Sam Kropp with the Northwest Forest Climate Alliance. Again, KBOO.FM, Wednesday Talk Radio. You can find out. And you can go back and check out previous programs. And I'm sure we'll be covering this some more. I know Barbara Bernstein has done a lot of great work. Locust Focus, Sam's been on there. She's had a lot of good stuff on the whole fire issue and post-fire logging. So, it's not over by any means, and it's still going on. And anybody who might have been active back then, you might need to get activated again. So we are going to go to a musical break with the song that usually starts out this program. And when we come back, we've got two water protectors who've been down there at Thacker Pass, Pihimaha, in Paiute, to try to stop this lithium mine from going forward. So stay tuned here to KBOO.
Your head up, lift the top of your mind, put your eyes on the earth, lift your heart to your own home planet. What do you see? What is your attitude? Are you here to improve or damn it? Look right now and you will see we're only here by the skin of our teeth as it is. So take heart and take care of your link with life. So take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful if you got the sense to take care of your source of perfection. Mother Nature, she's the daughter of God and the source of all protection. Look right now and you will see she's only here by the skin of her teeth as it is. So take heart and take care of your link.
Yes, indeed. Carry it on, Buffy St. Marie. That's as I said, usually our opening song. It's opening the next segment of this split program today. First, we had on the Brighton Bush lawless logging that's going on. Now we got the It's all lawless when it's invading traditional indigenous territories. The colonialism goes on and on. So we've got two water protectors, land and water protectors, who have been part of the camp that the people of Red Mountain have got going down in, as I said, northern Nevada, just below the Oregon border, to stop a proposed lithium mine. And it's a Tiwani and a fellow water protector. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you all doing down there? What's the weather like?
Oh, it's cold.
I bet.
It's cold.
Okay, so
it up there?
It's cold too. Just turned cold a couple days ago. It's kind of nice actually. Anyway, so T, go ahead and talk about why you're down there in northern Nevada.
All right. Well, right now we're not at Pahimaha. We're at Winnemucca. We were at Pahimaha, and there's a few of us there, but we got called down to Winnemucca because there's a Indian colony down here, and it's basically an elders community. It's full of elders, you know, and kids, like children, and maybe a few adults. But they're bulldozing homes down here. The colony is under the care of a lady who doesn't reside here. She doesn't even reside in the state. Bulldozing homes because when she got you know, took over on this colony, she decided that she was going to start charging all these elders rent. Right. And these elders, you know, some of them have been living here close to 50 years, you know, well over, you know what I'm saying? And this is their home. This is where they've been, you know, and all of a sudden, this lady comes and she decides that she wants to start charging these people rent. So these people, you know, I mean, just where they are and how they are, you know, they've been here for so long, you know, why should they? So she decides that she wants to start bulldozing homes, and she's been doing it for, you know, this has been going on since the 80s. And, you know, it just in a way, it bewilders me because this is the first time I've ever heard of it. And these are our elders. These are our jewels. You know what I mean? And as Native people, this should never happen. This should have never happened. You know what I'm saying? And that's, you know, because these elders, you know, they mean a lot to us. You know what I mean? And the way that they're being disrespected and treated in this colony is overwhelming.
So let me just first of all, I never heard of this. The term Winnemucca Indian Colony itself is really striking. It's amazing. It's kind of brazenly says what the historical reality of indigenous people are. They're still a colony. I'm sure there's a whole history to why it's called that and everything, but it is pretty striking. And I was just reading a little bit here that, let me just read this from Wikipedia just for people to know, because it's the Winnemucca Indian Colony joined non-natives from Utah in suing the United States to prevent the detonation of 700 tons of explosives at the Nevada test site, which is on ancestral Western Shoshone lands. In the 1940s, members of the tribe had been forcibly removed from their lands, which were taken over by the Nevada test site, where nuclear bombs were tested from 1951 to 1993. The tribe considers the removal and subsequent nuclear weapons testing on their lands as a violation of the 1863 Western Shoshone Treaty of Ruby Valley. Anyway, it talks about the United Nations saying something about it. It's just a short thing, but it's not only there, you know, in the test site area, but it's isn't it like the closest reservation? It is like a formally a federally designated reservation, I believe.
Yeah, well, the colony was given to the Indian people by, I believe, the railroad, right?
Yeah, United States government bought it from the railroad company.
Because the United States government gave the natives here some land in Winnemucca but it's, you know, it's a little further up the hill, you know. So the colony where they're at now is where they resided, because it was closer to town, closer to water, you know what I'm saying, and so on and so on. So this is where they're at. They resided here when the land was up there. So they bought it and they gave it to the natives, and it's kind of, you know, it's kind of up in the air. It's really a touchy subject, because well, you know, I mean, as of yesterday, they voted on a new council, and, you know, they're trying to get it, you know, like back into their own govern, you know what I'm saying? It's really touchy.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure those situations always are. So as I started to say with that what I was talking about, the Tessai Knoll, but so it is the closest native community to the proposed lithium mine site?
No, not this one. The closest reservation is Fort McDermitt.
Okay. But so is there a connection between what's happening in Winnemucca and the proposed lithium mine that you know of?
Yeah. It's all under the same company. It's all connected. See, this lady that runs the colony now, from California, she wants to demolish all these elders' homes so she can build homes for white miners to work at the lithium mine.
So where does this information come of? I've been hearing this. It sounds incredibly scandalous, which so many things are, but so where, how do you know this?
Multi-million dollar companies. The same judge who is overseeing the Pahimaha up at the lithium mine, the same judge that's overseeing that case is the same judge who's overseeing this case.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. So, it's way out there. I won't say in the middle of nothing, because obviously that's, that was traditional indigenous territory, Paiute Shoshone, and they lived there for generations and generations, and that was and is their homeland, but it's a long way from, you know, major cities, and, you know, where people who might, you know, who are listening to this show, for example, might be concerned about such things. So probably a lot of things like that have gone on with the impunity for a long time. Are there, so people are rising up. I know the is there a call to action? Are there people arriving to make a protest to try to do something about what's going on?
Yeah. On which issue are you asking? The Winnemucca or the lithium mine?
Well, both. They seem to be connected.
Yeah. Okay. So right now, you know, because of what's going on in Winnemucca, we put a call out. And we asked for water protectors to come and help us protect these elders, and in the time we've been able to hold them out with just the presence here. So we have water protectors here, and we have water protectors at Pahimaha, and people are coming in because there's actually been activity at Pahimaha, and, you know, we're not 100% sure that it's, you know, that the activity is connected to the mine, but we're about 60% sure. So, you know, things are happening up there, and we do need people. You know, we do need bodies. We need, you know, boots on the ground, because, you know, things are starting to happen down here. You know, like, starting with this, what's going on in the colony, you know, I mean, it's really disrespectful, and, it's overwhelming that this kind of stuff is still going on in Indian country right now.
Mm-hmm.
With everything, you know. And within the last... you know, the last few years of presidency and everything like that, you know, if people have been just coming out just openly, just to the extremes with their racism and their, you know what I'm saying?
Overwhelming. You think that's another sort of effect of Trumpism, which is always, you know, that anti-indigenous, anti-black, anti-people of color racism is so deeply embedded in the history and culture of the country. But so you think that kind of open anti-native sentiments and you know, attempts to take opportunistically take advantage, you think that's come out a lot more under the Trump previous Trump administration?
Oh yeah. Yeah, he showed them how to do it. Mm-hmm. He showed them how to not be a, you know, just go ahead and lie every day. Every time you speak, just lie, you know, you get away with it. It's okay, you know. Just like they did, you know, just like how they practice on us, you know what I'm saying? Like Standing Rock with the hoses and the dogs and all that, you know what I'm saying? They're exercising it, you know what I'm saying? They're pushing it, seeing how far they can go, you know what I'm saying? And uh-huh. and Trump showed them how to do that, you know.
So we've got 15 minutes left in the show. This is a Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm the regular host, Paul Rowan. I've got Tiwani and a fellow water protector who maybe we can hear from a little more as we go on. But we do have a little bit of time. If anybody's got a real pointed, pertinent question or comment, we do have a line open. 503-231-8187 is a number to call in. And, you know, be concise. Kind of got a lot going on this program. So, maybe we can hear from your fellow water protector. I asked the same thing of, I think, Gary McKinney, I believe I had on a few weeks ago talking about the issue of Thacker Pass, talking about the sort of the resurgence of Native youth activism. You know, really Standing Rock was kind of, it went back. I remember, you know, here in the Northwest, the issue of the megalodes going up, the big tar sands extraction equipment that was offloaded on the Columbia River and sent by highway all the way up to to Alberta, Canada. It activated a lot of the Native youth from Warm Springs and Umatilla and Nez Perce. I mean, I'm sure it's been going on forever, but that's the time I remember it's sort of starting here in the Northwest. And then obviously Standing Rock really exploded on the scene. Native people from all over the country went there. And I know, I believe, T, you were at Line 3 in Minnesota. It seems like there's sort of a emerging a Native youth movement. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yeah, people are rising up. You know what I mean? It's pretty amazing to me, you know, because, yeah, like ever since Standing Rock, you know, it set a fire in our youth. When those youth ran there, you know what I'm saying, and that's what I'm seeing now. I'm seeing a lot of our youth rise up, you know, and it's beautiful. You know, I seen some kids in Portland, a friend of mine, her daughter, you know, they marched out of school, marched down the ice, and protested. You know, it's pretty awesome. You know what's going on out here. You know, just the beauty of it. You know, the strength. Our youth, you know, our future.
Let me ask the same thing of your fellow water protector. How did you get activated and involved?
I'm from Little Earth in Minneapolis, and it's a Native housing project that was started by AIM in the 70s. So it's just been part of my life growing up, really.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. That's deep history. So you basically learned about this stuff as you were growing up. The history, you were really steeped in it, and then some people kind of reacted. You know, some people react against their parents' politics and stuff. But a good thing you didn't.
Yeah, and you know, growing up in the youth, we have no other choice but to rise up because the genocide is ongoing. The colonizers, they're killing the earth. We have no other choice but to stand up. Like, as Native people, we have that responsibility to take care of our earth because she takes care of us, too.
Mm-hmm. So were you also involved in Line 3?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I went there. Was there for a bit.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yep.
You don't need to go in any great detail. That's okay. I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but it's just, you know, it's good for people, you know, who are, you know, busy with our lives and have other commitments, can't necessarily get out to these places to, you know, to hear. So So what are you, know, what are, do you have any asks of people who are listening to your voices on the radio for, you know, how to, just in general, how to support, and specifically the Thacker Pass, maybe, you know, talk a little bit more about Thacker Pass.
Yeah, Thacker Pass, they're proposed, and they got proposed sites right here at Pahimaha, and then on the back side of the hill on the Oregon side, which is, there's been a lot of activity, and we have a camp at Pahimaha, and you know, we're on the ground there, but there's only so many of us. So, you know, we get more people down here, we want to establish some more camps on some of these other roads, because there's a lot of area to protect out here, and it's really beautiful out here, you know what I mean? And any place where we can establish a camp, it's beautiful, you know. And you know, like right here where we're at, you know, right here in Winnemucca, we have a few up there, you know, and we're just kind of, you know, keeping us, you know, we just say level in between, you know. But right here where we're at Winnemucca at the time, we're concentrating on prayer, you know, because this is an elders community, and you know, we've been here, and we're not going nowhere until we know that these elders are safe. So in the meantime, we're going to be bringing prayer. We want songs. We want healing. We want dance. You know, we have a community center. We want to have a round dance. We want to have a powwow. You know, we're talking about a youth and elders conference. But of course, you know, we're only going to tackle it all, you know, just one thing at a time, you know, for these elders. But that's mainly what we want to do, because these elders have been put through so much stress, and, you know, and so much hurt. And just, you know what I'm saying, just for the last, since the 80s, they've been going through this. These people have been doing it to them, you know, and it breaks my heart, you know. So what we want to do is we want to rejuvenate this community with a little bit of love, you know, and a little bit of prayer. However we can do that, you know, like Standing Rock, the way they had that fireplace, every night it was like a powwow, and people get their outfits on and come out and dance. That's what we want here, you know. We want love, you know. So, you know, if people are listening out there, you know, come, bring your drum, bring your outfit, you know. Bring your gourd, you know what I'm saying? Whatever you have that, you know, you can offer to help this community, bring it. Because that's what we're looking for right now, right here, you know. And as for boots on the ground, you know, that's we need that. That's what we need. And we have places for you to sleep. We have food for you to eat, you know. We have a toilet for you.
You know? As long as people are here, it will keep those bulldozers out.
Okay.
So we need people here. As far as the Pahimaha goes, I feel like we'll definitely need people there. We need people there now. We need people there in the future, continued on, because I feel like that's going to be a big, hard, long battle. Lithium is white gold, and not only is it used for Tesla and their car batteries or whatever, but it's fighting this mine is also fighting the military-industrial complex, because they use this lithium for all their technology and stuff, so this could get pretty big.
Yeah, no, you stepped into a big one. You know, obviously, you know, I've talked about on this program somewhat the, you know, the Green New Deal, a lot of the hopes and aspirations of the, you know, of the people fighting climate change are unfortunately too uncritically focused on what I consider simplistic solutions like the electrification of our automobiles, and don't look at the bigger picture, that just the continuing industrial growth depends upon continued exploitation and devastation and extractivism. This is just another form of extractivism, along with the coal, oil, etc. But that's what I've got to say. We have a few minutes left. 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. So, you know, there's a couple websites. There's protectthackerpass.org, and there's peopleofredmountain.com, I believe, where people can get information. Are there, like, any phone numbers, or are those the best places to get information about how to plug in? Because not easy to, I don't know, I guess people can just put on their GPS and head down there. Is there a way that, you know, people are sort of screened or introduced to what's going on, so that they can, you know, find out and you know, find out how to plug in?
Gary McKinney and Duranda Hinkey, you know, if they want information on that, you know, they, like you just said, there's different organizations there, you know, but under us and what we do, you go to hashtag Sugarbush Gang. Is it okay. Gang or crew? Sugarbush.
Sugarbush Gang on Twitter.
Sugarbush Gang. I like it. Okay, anybody does Twitter Sugarbush Gang? You mentioned, you know, bringing drums and gourds. And obviously, that's oriented towards indigenous folks. But are you encouraging non-native folks to come down there as well?
Yeah, we have allies here, and you know we want allies too. We need allies, you know.
Okay. Well, we do have a caller on the line. And again, just a few minutes left. So go ahead, Santiago. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I really just wanted to reemphasize the point you made, Paul, about the idea of like extractivism. You know, and I think that's what a lot of people who maybe are listening to this, who are, you know, like, you know, they want to see the electrification of vehicles, but you know, people don't realize that it comes at a cost. And I just feel like that's such an important thing to make, because I've heard a lot of other commentators on KABU who've talked about, like, you know, without maybe even thinking about it, the further expropriation of native land and native resources for creating what they might think would be like this utopian vision for themselves. And I just feel like it's really important that, you know, that the Stack or Pass issue is really bringing into fact that you can't just keep walking on indigenous people. You know, you can't keep taking our land and thinking that you do whatever you want with it, even if you think it's for good. Like, we need to be included in the conversation when you guys, when colonizers want to do stuff like this. And it's like, I mean, I personally feel like it's bigger than that, but I mean, at least if you're going to start there, and it's just, you know, just having, you know, the people out there at, you know, Pimua, you know, like, getting trampled on for, you know, what people think is like this great environmental cause. It's like, you're not making the situation better, you're just making it worse. This idea that we can just develop technology to get us out of issues that technology has created is just astonishing. It's the short-sightedness of it all. And I just wanted to really thank you for bringing up really being able to say that out loud, that, you know, this extractivism, and, you know, the fact that, you know, the lithium is not just going for electric cars, that, you know, that, you know, the military industrial complex is involved, you know, because they use, like, the water, you know, the land protector said, you know, they're using it for their tech. And it's like, anytime you get the military industrial complex involved, it becomes even worse. So.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Santiago. Always good to hear from you. We've got a couple minutes left here. It's a big issue that we're going to continue to address here. And obviously lithium is used widely in sort of this new generation of technological products, long-term storage batteries, which is also a lot of the hopes being pinned on alternative energies are there as well. So, you know, people keep saying, oh, we're going to find other minerals, other things that aren't as destructive as lithium, but they haven't come up with it yet. So last words, T1E and your fellow water protector, to our Portland and beyond audience.
Yeah, I want to thank Santiago, for speaking on the military industrial complex, because they have a big part in this, a very big part in this, and that's probably the biggest part of this. So, you know, I mean, it's like, as I said earlier, it's very touchy, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, and as to the allies, oh yeah, most definitely they're welcome here. You know, protect the sacred, you know, that's what it's all about. And you know, we got love for our allies too. And really quick, you know, I just wanted to throw in, you know what I'm saying? I just wanted to give a shout out and a hello to, you know, all the brothers and sisters incarcerated. You know, if any of them are listening, you know, I just tell you to keep your heads up. Much love and respect down there.
Okay, well, we got to go. Thank you for both of you. We got the theme music coming up, and that's all we have time for. Thank you so much, T-Winnie, and your fellow water protector, and to our previous guest, Sam Kropp, talking about the illegal lawless logging. Go to our website, kbo.fm. Wednesday Talk Radio and find out more. And you can check out some of the back programs I've done on these and similar subjects. Thank you all for listening. This is Paul Rowland signing off.
Thanks for listening to KVOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at KBOO.FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing, unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify.